Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Jessen, Judge Clary, the Honorable Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this November 17, 2021 oral argument calendar. This is the third of four cases to be considered today, the third and final one to be considered by oral argument. And the case we're considering is Linden Place Villa Homeowners Association versus Advanced Innovative Management Corp. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you'd like to use that time for rebuttal. Even though we can see each other in this Zoom platform, we are only making an audio recording of the proceedings. So please do state your name and as you commence each leg of your argument so that we can keep track of who's attached to which argument in the audio recording. With that, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. McGee. My name is Brandon Schwartz, and I represent Advanced Innovative Management Corp. in this appeal. I would submit to Your Honors that the arbitration award conflicts with itself, and this case should result in a published opinion vacating the arbitration award. On the one hand, the arbitrator states, quote, and this is at addendum page 11, the case essentially turns on whether the 10% fee for capital improvements is applicable to the insurance repair project and whether parties agreed to modify the terms of the management agreement through their conduct, end quote. And on the other hand, on page 19 of the addendum 11 of the order says, quote, the parties verbally agreed to modify the management, end quote. But there's no finding of ambiguity, although she cites case law applicable to interpreting an ambiguous contract. There's no finding that the integration clause was ambiguous. There's no finding that both parties agreed to modify the agreement in a writing signed by both parties as required by the agreement. I believe under those facts and circumstances, the arbitrator exceeded her powers and should be vacated.
Was there argument to the arbitrator about the ambiguity issue?
There was argument. Linden Place argued that the language on this insurance project, the up to 10%, was ambiguous. We said it wasn't. We said that the language says we'll be charged up to 10%. One party is doing the charging, one party is getting charged.
But just generally speaking, the parties argued over whether the language was ambiguous, and the arbitrator, the district court does point out that the arbitrator, despite the express statement of the rationale, cited and analyzed case law about ambiguous provisions, and then made a decision as if it were interpreting an ambiguous contract. In light of that, I mean, isn't that enough to support the district court's decision affirming the award?
You are correct in that the parties, Linden asserted that the contract was ambiguous, that language that is throughout our brief. You are correct in that the district court, I believe, added language to the arbitration award saying, well, the court analyzed ambiguous or cited ambiguous case law, or, you know, the interpretation of an ambiguous contract. So the arbitrator must have meant this. I think that that's contrary to the language of the actual award, though, because the award says that the parties agreed to modify the agreement, either by conduct or orally. She says it in a different spot. Once she says orally, once she says by conduct. So if the rationale is that it was modified by agreement or modified by conduct, you would not need to cite case law for interpreting an ambiguous contract. That's why I say that the award itself contradicts itself. It's I think at best confusing, but I submit that it should be vacated. I think that when you look at what this court specifically has held in past cases, Burke versus Fine case, 608 Northwest 2nd 909, that quote, we cannot add terms to the contract by interpretation when the terms set out by the parties are unambiguous, end quote. Kaufman Stewart Inc. versus Weinbrenner, Shoe Co., 589 Northwest 2nd 499. The court held, quote, it is improper to go beyond the actual language of the contract where the wording itself is clear, end quote.
Right, but if the parties argued over the ambiguity, whether it was ambiguous, and if it was ambiguous, what it meant, and then the arbitrator made a decision that incorporated, without stating, at least according to the district court, sort of incorporated that argument and resolve that argument. I mean, this is, help me to understand the standard of review here. The standard of review is de novo, but technically speaking, we're not really directly interpreting the contract here. We're reviewing the district court's decision in its interpretation as to what the contract means and how it applies. Do you agree with that?
I don't think you're reviewing the district court's decision. I think you're reviewing the arbitrator's decision. And I think when you say, yes, I acknowledge, Judge Ross, that it's a high burden for me with an arbitration award, no doubt about it. And we look at Minnesota Statute 572B.23A4 about the arbitration award would be vacated if the arbitrator exceeds the arbitrator's powers. So then we look to the contract and say, what powers did the parties give to the arbitrator here? The powers that...
Just to be clear about what I was suggesting about the standard of review, the district court has the duty, and I suppose we do too, to give every reasonable presumption favoring the finality of the arbitrator's award and its validity. And that's why I was questioning about, you know, it's true, it's a de novo review, but in this case, the district court, at least arguably, relied on that presumption favoring finality.
I think that that's a correct statement, that the district court relied on that presumption of finality. And I think if you look at the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees case that we cited for the standard of review, it's that essentially the award needs to draw its essence from the contract and can in some rational manner be derived from the agreement. So I do acknowledge, Your Honor, that that's a difficult standard for me on this appeal, but notwithstanding, I think we meet it because when you look at when parties bargain for an arbitration clause, they set the boundaries of what the arbitrator can and can't decide here. The parties bargained for and agreed to that the arbitrator would be limited to interpreting the terms of the contract. She goes beyond that by modifying the contract, by saying that the parties, even though there was no writing, even though there's a full integration clause, saying and no finding of ambiguity, saying that they modified it. So I don't think you can say that it draws its essence from the contract. I think it draws its essence from a new contract that the arbitrator determined was agreed to contrary to the terms of the actual agreement.
Mr. Schwartz, doesn't your argument really boil down to whether or not the arbitrator ignored the arbitration clause, as you suggest, or applied Minnesota law to the integration clause, you know, with the Larson case, which says, yeah, you can modify by conduct in this situation? I mean, isn't that the real rub here?
Yes, it's a combination of that. I think there's neither Mr. McGee nor I have cited to the court a case which was in arbitration that had a full integration clause like this with no finding of ambiguity and that there was a permissible modification.
Okay, so then does that bring us back to what their finding of ambiguity? Because I must say, this follows up on Judge Ross's earlier question. When I look at the arbitrator's award, and I look at page 13 of the award, I think it's at your addendum at page 21, you know, where the arbitrator is saying, oh, where a contract is ambiguous, then the terms of the contract are determined by the fact finder, and then she goes on to find those facts. To me, that's what would be at least an implicit finding, at the very least, of ambiguity.
But the,
could you help me with that?
I can try. I think that gets back to my comment earlier of the award conflicting with itself. If you're finding that it gets that it's ambiguous, there's no basis to say that the parties modified it by agreement. If you're saying that it's ambiguous, you would look towards, extraneous evidence as to how they meant this provision to be interpreted. That's not what she did. She said, no, they actually modified the agreement orally. That's where it's
But the facts are the same, right? It's just a matter, of whether you say, well, these are the facts that show the intent, or these are the facts that show modification. Is that fair to say?
I think on a factual issue, I lose because we give the arbitrator broad authority on that. We're not going to modify.
But I'm just saying you're just looking at the same set of the arbitrator's looking at the same set of facts that she found. It's just a matter of whether you use the lens of it's ambiguous. So these are the facts that establish intent, or these are the facts that show modification. Right? We're talking about the same set of facts.
Same set of facts. Yes. Same set of facts. But the problem is, when you have an integration clause that we have here that is not found to be ambiguous, and Linden didn't argue that the integration clause was ambiguous, then we're going beyond the language of the contract, and I think she's impermissibly rewriting it.
Counsel, let me interrupt for a minute. I understand that you don't agree. We're about to hear from the other side that up to 10% is arguably ambiguous. I realize there wasn't a finding to that, but that language arguably is ambiguous. Up to could be zero, could be 10. And I understand you said that one side sets the amount, but I keep coming back to the fact that even though she used modification language, as you pointed out, the case law was ambiguous contract language, not modification language. So why wouldn't that be enough, given the narrow standard for us to be second guessing here? Why wouldn't that be enough to affirm the award?
I think, Your Honor, that she did cite the ambiguous language. There's no doubt about it. But I think we're adding a finding or a holding to her award that's just not there. And I don't think that that's permissible. I think that when you, and in fact, I think to do so would actually contradict her other findings or holdings that the parties agreed to modify the agreement. I think it would be a different story, Judge, if she had said the agreement is ambiguous and I've interpreted it this way. But she doesn't actually say that. She says the parties agreed to modify it. And I think that that's where the rub is. And I think that that's where she's exceeded her powers, because had she said this agreement is ambiguous, I likely lose on that argument because of the broad authority that we're giving to her. But she doesn't. Instead, she says it's modified, which is she's exceeded her powers.
Right. But at the same time, though, she does. So she says it's modified, but also in her findings that would suggest an ambiguity, findings that would be necessary only if she was treating the language as ambiguous. If we were to overlay, I know it's a de novo review, but if we were to overlay the presumption, I think that carries forward, not just with the district court originally determining the finality issue, but for us, our de novo review carries forward that presumption, doesn't it? The presumption in favor of finality and validity?
A presumption in favor of finality and validity, but not ignoring if an arbitrator has exceeded their powers. Yes, agreed. I agree with that.
Not ignoring whether the arbitrator exceeded her powers, but looking at the arbitrator's decision in the framework of the, well, you've mentioned, I think you used the term muddled, where you've got this language and it's clearly imprecise. I don't think anyone would question the conclusion that the language is imprecise. But the district court seems to have carefully considered this imprecise language, what appears to be an ambiguity in the arbitrator's award. And with this presumption of finality, construed it in favor of granting the award and affirming the arbitrator's decision. I'm trying to get a sense of why that's wrong in the broader scheme of our review.
I think that your summary of what the district court did is correct. I do think the district court deferred essentially to finality and the broad powers we give arbitrators. But I don't think that simply deferring to finality allows us to ignore when you exceed specifically defined powers that we give arbitrators in a contract. It's a bargain for a contract.
Right, but that's only if we interpret the arbitrator's award the way you're suggesting that we interpret it. And the tough thing here is we've got an arguably ambiguous contract and an arguably ambiguous arbitrator's decision interpreting it.
I noticed my time's out, Judge. Would you like me to?
Please do. Go ahead and respond.
I would say that we certainly have an ambiguous award. We'll leave to this high court on whether it's an ambiguous contract or not. But I do think that it doesn't fit the confines of the case law from this court that we look to in interpretation of a contract. And I don't think, Your Honor, to your point, in the question before about, well, she made findings that relate to ambiguity. I don't think she did. She made findings related to whether they modified it, but not as it relates to ambiguity. So with that, Your Honor, I will save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. And you will have the full 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Counsel for respondent.
Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. Schwartz. I represent Linden Place, and the arbitrator issued a multi-page report. It was a two-day arbitration. These issues obviously were litigated heavily during that proceeding. And two issues I want to bring to the attention. One is that the arbitrator did find an ambiguity, maybe not as tactfully or as clearly as she should, but she came to that determination of ambiguity, I think, threefold. One is she acknowledges the argument. Two, she cites the law regarding ambiguity, and she provides a legal analysis as it applies to ambiguity. Now, counsel says, well, she rewrote the contract, but in reality, what she did is this provision is ambiguous.
If you could pause for a minute. Pause for a minute.
Sorry.
Do you believe that the arbitrator went through with the fourth step and expressly resolved the ambiguity?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I believe the ambiguity was resolved when she applied the facts that she determined and applied those to that ambiguity, meaning the up to 10%.
Expressly determined the meaning of the contract.
I'm going to try to answer the question as I understand it. But if you're asking, did she define up to 10%? In her finding, in her determination, she said this is ambiguous and then made a determination that it was 2.5% based upon the facts that she found. Now, so you have an ambiguous up to 10%, which arguably includes, as Justice Cleary says, 0 to 10, 2.5% based upon specific factual findings that she made along the way that clearly demonstrated. But I'd like to, and I think the court has a good sense of the ambiguity argument, but I would like just to spend some time to talk about the second prong of why this is this should be affirmed. The second prong is this agreement says it'll be governed by Minnesota law. And if you look at the language, the arbitration agreement, it says any dispute arising between the agent and the association with regard to the terms of this agreement will be submitted to binding arbitration. And that, there's no limitation there as to what is going to be decided, the terms of the agreement. And those terms are subject to Minnesota law, another provision of the contract. So counsel wants you to disregard that provision because, as you know, Minnesota law allows contracts, even if they say they can't be modified orally, that they can be modified orally based upon the conduct of the parties and the statements. And I think if you look at the record, there's overwhelming evidence in this case that the parties agreed at 2.5% and that the arbitrator made specific findings about that. So I think even if for whatever reason you were determined that the ambiguity is not clearly stated enough, despite the fact that Judge Hoffman, in rendering his affirmation of the arbitration award, says any reasonable reading of this makes a determination of ambiguity. But even if you were to say, no, that doesn't apply, this is a modification, I think Minnesota law does kick in. And I think counsel's looking at this where somehow we're supposed to look at these things in a vacuum, the agreement in a vacuum. No, the agreement is subject to Minnesota law and all the decisions that come from that. And here in this case, and remember, I really want to emphasize, this is a contract that was drafted by appellant. So the terms in the agreement up to 10% is their drafting. Is the provisions regarding the integration clause or the arbitrator's authority all within their purview to have made that modification if they thought something needed to be cleared up. They're the ones that created up to 10% language, which creates the very problem. I'd also like just to step back and also talk about the underpinnings of that. Let's be exceedingly clear here. There is, in this case, these parties had a conversation about what up to 10% meant. They had an agreement. The judge says the arbitrator found there was an agreement. The only thing that counsel can or appellant can rely upon is to say, well, they didn't put it into a formal document signed by both parties, despite the fact that there's emails and communications. And the reason I bring that up is not to say that, because I'm not here to argue that somehow those emails are writing under the integration clause. What I'm saying is the reason we have the provisions regarding the allowance of oral modifications of contracts, despite there being an integration clause, is for these kinds of cases. Because this is a case where the parties in numerous occasions agreed at 2.5%, and then all of a sudden, surreptitiously, they took $150,000 from this homeowners association in, you know, I'm going to use a kind of an overstated phrase, in the dead of the night, but it was probably during the day, but they didn't know about it. So I think that's why in this case, whether we find ambiguity or not, really the provisions there with respect to Minnesota law and why we have that law is to protect in these kinds of situations where the party's conduct and behavior are consistent with that, but all of a sudden they want to say, oh, you know, you didn't have it in writing, something they didn't insist at the time, despite the fact of sending email saying we haven't agreed upon 2.5%.
It sounds like you're arguing really the equities of the case. I mean, if the law is not on your side, I assume you acknowledge that the arbitrator can't go beyond the contract, even if it looks like the parties really intended for 2.5 to be the to be the fee. You recognize that, right?
Yeah, I recognize that. I'm only raising it as argument number two, which is if you want to consider this a modification, it's allowed to be modified because of Minnesota law, and that this case fits squarely within the confines of that kind of case where you're going to say, you know, we're not going to let you run up behind and use the integration clause because of your conduct. So yeah, there is a little bit of equity in my discussion here. But I would also like and is to talk about Judge Hoffman and his decision. Now, Judge Hoffman said clearly that any reasonable interpretation of the arbitrator's decision rendered that she found an ambiguity based upon the criteria we talked about earlier. And so here you have the judge looking at this, receiving all the information, making that. But I think in this case, we look at it and go, was the arbitrator and Judge Hoffman totally out to lunch here in terms of making a determination of ambiguity? I don't think so. I think they clearly saw the case and made the determination. Would I have liked the arbitrator to have stated more clearly about ambiguity? Absolutely. We wouldn't be here today. I think Mr. Schwartz has acknowledged that if she would have made that determination. But just because she didn't explicitly say it doesn't mean the interpretation of that arbitration award is not consistent with ambiguity. And given the status or the state of the law here with respect to arbitrators and arbitration decisions, great deference is given to the arbitrator in this case as to the application of her award and her findings, whether it is factual or legal. And then you have Judge Hoffman making his determination, which is consistent with our position in the case. Well, I'm sorry.
Great deference may be given to the arbitrator's decision, but you're not suggesting we give deference to the district court's analysis under a de novo review.
You are correct, Your Honor. I just universally give deference to the judge, so I always say that. So, but his interpretation, I think, carries some weight. I know I have time, but I believe the court is aware of what's the facts, and I'm not going to spend 5 minutes reading from my diary. So I'll pass on the remaining time.
Thank you. Mr. McGee, it doesn't appear as if there are any other questions from the panel. So okay. So you are free to defer. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge. Judge Ross, you asked Mr. McGee if the court made it or the arbitrator made it to the fourth step about resolving that ambiguity. And as much respect as I have for Mr. McGee and as fun as it was to try the case against him, I don't think he answered that question because it's not in the award. She cites that she does not resolve that ambiguity. And when you read, it's page 13 of the award, addendum, page 21, right after she cites the ambiguous case law and referencing that the association had argued that it was ambiguous, then she goes right into this discussion about a modification between the parties. So she's not resolving the ambiguity language. She doesn't get to that fourth step like you asked. And so it's just missing. It's not there. And when Mr. McGee says there was overwhelming evidence about the parties agreeing to this modification, obviously that was hotly disputed, but what is absolutely missing here is what's required by the integration clause, which is a writing signed by both parties. There is none. It's not there. That's why the arbitrator goes beyond the terms of the contract and says the parties agreed to modify it. Unless the court has any other questions for me, I think we've briefed this issue, I think very well. I would submit, I hope Mr. McGee has. And I thank the court for the time and consideration on this matter.
Well, thank you. And it does not appear as if there are any other questions from the panel. So Mr. Schwartz, Mr. McGee, thank you for your briefing in this case. Very thorough and interesting issue. But the matter is now final as far as its submission is concerned. It's submitted. We're taken under advisement and we will issue our opinion within the statutory period.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McGee.
Thank you both. This is the final argument we have for our calendar for today by oral argument. So the court is in recess. Have a great day.
Thank you.